Hey everyone, welcome to The Same Boat. My name is Roy Kim, and joining me is Pastor Wilson Wang from Renew OC. Hello, Wilson.
Hello.
Are you ready for our next topic series?
I'm excited about it.
Yeah, me too. This one is going to be about singleness, and I know we can go in so many different directions, and so we're going to try to hit several different subtopics within the larger topic of singleness. And for today, we're gonna go straight to the heart of the issue, and that is the feeling of loneliness as a single. And even here, there are so many different ways that we can parse this out, but definitely there is a significant feeling of loneliness that many singles do feel. Maybe what we can do is start it off by talking about our own experiences of loneliness when we were single. So do you have a story to share, Wilson?
Yeah, I think it's one of the large themes of my life. So I talk a little bit about my childhood, but it really informs my young adult life as well as college. I remember being at school and I literally had no friends all the way up to fifth grade.
What?
Where I met my first friend. Yeah, I met my first friend in fifth grade, but he was only at church. So I didn't get to see him.
Once a week?
At school. I know. So like, I'm still sitting alone.
Sad.
It's really sad. So my options were getting bullied or being alone. Those were my lunch options, my after school options. So I remember the kids just chasing me around the schoolyard and then surrounding me and then pushing me a lot. And it was like a really terrible experience. So a lot of times I would just kind of sit by myself and try not to get bullied. And
hey, do we need like a separate session about that, man?
Yeah, this is why I'm here, for free therapy. For free therapy, Roy. Should we just end the podcast and
cut the tape?
Yeah. So school sucked. School sucked for years, years and years, and then I also got sick often, so I'd be at home for multiple days. I remember I missed the month of school, my first quarter. So from then on, I needed doctor notes because it became illegal to miss school. I missed a whole month of school within 3 months. And so just days on end in bed, again, by myself. And my mom was also emotionally unavailable during my childhood. She was just a robot in terms of having to do massive amounts of work to survive, like a lot of immigrant parents. So it was just a checklist, you know. After she got home from a 9 to 10 hour work day, like, feed us, clean us, feed dad, clean the house, and she was exhausted. And so just a profound sense of loneliness at school, at home. And I remember, I think it was a Furby, one of the first talking toys. I remember it was able to like talk back to you somehow. And I remember when I had it for a few weeks. My friend left it at my house. And I remember spending all my time with Furby. And Roy, you're supposed to laugh. This is a sad story, Roy.
Why?
This is a sad story. I'm not going to bend you. I'm not bemoing you for this session. Okay, so seriously, though, I spent like hours with Furby, and he was like one of the closest friends I had.
Dude.
And I remember it was like, it could have turned into a horror movie really quickly.
This is really tragic.
It's so sad. Yeah, it's so sad. I remember my mom just was like almost having to tear it away from me because I got attached to this stuffed animal. And, you know, I could see, okay, to be a little bit more sober, I could see how people have a mental disorder where you hear other voices, or if you want to spiritualize it, like you're communing with demons because you're so alone. Like I don't think I was super far away from that.
Wow.
At the same time, I'm very grateful that those moments often drew me to Jesus. So when I sat by myself at school, just really knowing him and praying, and or when I was at home in bed, again, just talking to the Lord. So there was a very real relationship with Jesus as my best friend. And so much of that drove me to pastoring, where I just wanted other people to find him as a friend. So moving into my college and young adult life, I became extremely popular in college. So in high school I was popular. I grew taller, I learned how to dress, I played ball. And then when I hit college, I realized that everyone was really alone and insecure. Like, I could see that in others. I can always see someone left out because I grew up like that. I have those eyes.
You had like a radar, huh?
Yeah, it's like I just see me everywhere when I see people who feel ostracized and alone. And that's helped me honestly be a good pastor. But the first day of college, everyone was me. It was like everyone was me on campus because they all lost their friends, the freshmen. They're all disoriented, they're all insecure. And I was like, I can make 1,000 friends. So I walked up to like every person in the dorms. I was like, my name is Wilson, I'll be your friend. And then they would like attach to me like a duckling. And literally hundreds of friends my freshman year. And I kind of grew in confidence and charisma. I never lost that part of me that was alone. And so even with the many friends that I had, which my close friends always accuse me of being a friend whore, like a lot of them are very loyal and like they have a closed circle and I'm just like with everyone. But even with that kind of popularity in college, I often felt like there was this insatiable loneliness, like almost like I was trying to make up for those fundamental years of being alone and rejected in my life, and I couldn't. I would hang out till like 2, 3 a.m. every day with like dozens of kids on campus. At church, I had so many friends, and we would go home, when we could drink in as young adults. We'd go home at like 2, 3 a.m., but I would want to hang out longer. And so all my close friends would say, okay, see you, Wilson. See you at your house, And that was everyone telling me like we're going home. But they knew like how to coddle my soul, it was code for, hey, we're all going home, but it's like, oh, listen, we'll see you at your house. And there was this sense that I hated being alone, even when I had dozens and dozens of friends. I still like loathed loneliness and often felt it. Yeah, so I would just say, man, if you're feeling alone, like, I definitely understand and have had profound experiences of that. And I think a lot of people do.
So, do you know how there's extroverts and introverts, right? And so extroverts, they can identify themselves as such because they don't like being alone. They draw energy from other people. Would you say that many extroverts are that way, that because they're born out of trauma?
I think it was sad, my, because we just talked a little bit before the podcast, right? Like maybe you're an introvert. Are you an introvert,
I
Roy?
am a strong one.
A strong one. So you're like, oh, I was kind of, I didn't really have friends in elementary school, but I played my G.I. Joes and I felt fine. I think what was tough for me is I needed people because I'm an extreme extrovert. I really love connection. And every time I reached out for connection, I felt rejected over and over again. So I think for an extrovert to feel like there's no one to connect to, it's like starving.
So maybe there's, so maybe for the ones who are extroverted, there's like another level beyond that where it seems insatiable. Maybe that's the part that is trying to overcompensate for some past trauma. And by the
Absolutely.
way, sorry for laughing about the Furby. It's just, I think it was just the image of you talking to the Furby.
Oh
And
my gosh, yeah.
but yeah, I mean, now that I actually kind of absorb the story, that's a really tragic story. And you're right. I guess for some people that could lead to entertaining demons, right? You know, if you're kind of inclined that way to to let your loneliness lead you to such a dark place where you're saying, hey, even if the demons will talk to me, I'll talk with them, you know?
Yeah.
I definitely do relate in kind of a different way, though. I mean, yes, as an introvert, I was perfectly fine being alone. I mean, I did have my friends in elementary school, but being with people too long just kind of drained me. And so I would retreat and go into fantasy and create battle scenes with my G.I. Joes and create dialogue with my Transformers. And it was fun. So I didn't mind being alone. However, I think one of my most clear memories of being alone was when I was pastoring. I felt like I was in seminary and I was kind of getting all the information from the professors and trying to digest it all and see in what way I can kind of communicate this to my people. And I think my pastoring mentality was not so much about how do I connect with them. Mm-hmm. I think my mentality back then was, how do I do a good job of training them? How do I get them from point A to point B?
Hmm.
And if I don't get them from point A to point B, I'm a failure, right? And so when I felt like I wasn't doing a good job, it was a very lonely place for me to be because I didn't want to share how much of a failure I was to other pastors, right? And I didn't want to share my gripes with the people that I'm trying to shepherd because I don't want to like scold them to their face. And I'll focus so much. I put so much emphasis on trying to preach well. Like I wanted the arguments to be airtight. I wanted there to be a strong message for them to be convicted by the word so that they would now see the light and now move from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. And so the entire process really was devoid of connection. And if any people showed to me immaturity, or maybe if they showed immaturity, I interpreted that as like defiance or obstinance, you know? So I was such a black and white thinker. You mentioned the loving bosom of John MacArthur. I think in some ways, you know, that those stone cold arms of John MacArthur, as well as maybe other more pronounced evangelical teachers of the day, really influenced me to go very hard nosed, you know, when it comes to theology and thing and results, right? Obedience or nothing, right? So it was a very lonely place for me to be. I couldn't commune with other pastors, partly because I just felt like I didn't want to shave time away from sermon prep. Because again, everything revolved around whether I would preach well, whether it would be received well, whether it would have its intended effect. And it was miserable.
Hmm.
And you know, during that time as well, I think I dealt with the loneliness with a lot of video gaming and with a lot of porn. You know, it's just that escape into fantasy where I could at just for the moment stop living in the frustration of the present and to go into a fantasy where nothing mattered or maybe in the fantasy I mattered. And maybe in the fantasy, I don't know, like whatever I was doing was seen as good or effective or whatever. Like that's the illusion that I escaped into. And it's kind of a weird way to address loneliness, right? Because you're still not connecting with anything real. You're just kind of lost in your own thoughts, right? It's kind of like the mirror of Erised in Harry Potter. So That's the story that comes up for me immediately when I think about a season of loneliness.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I think a lot of pastors, but kind of those spaces where we're performing, often it's hard to let people in.
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
And I just think that it's extremely relatable.
Yeah. So, you know, this was our way of helping the listeners, kind of like breaking the ice for the listeners, because we know what it's like to feel lonely, even like profound loneliness. And, you know, like I mentioned earlier, there are a lot of pathways and branches that we can take, you know, for this topic. And so I do have a few questions to bounce off of you. Maybe we could try to answer some of these loneliness questions together. So one question is, what happens if all your friends are dating, or all your friends are married, or all your friends have, you know, kids to tend to and things like that? Like, basically, they just don't have the time to hang out with you 24/7 anymore, because like they're in a different season of life. Like, what do you do with that loneliness?
Yeah, that's tough. I remember my best friend, who we hung out like every single day. He got a girlfriend before me. And I remember being so upset that I had to split time with her, because, you know, it was like the first close friend that got a girlfriend. And there was literally a conversation where he called. I was like, hey, let's go watch this movie on Friday. And he's like, oh, I'm going with Alicia. And I said, can I come too? She could sit on your right and I'll sit on your left. But I wasn't even kidding. Like, I thought I always had an open invitation into his schedule, into his life, and it was different, and I was so mad. And it was a group of four. So he got a girlfriend at the time. My other very close friend got a girlfriend. So it was then me and my other friend, the two of us, and he saw how sad I was becoming, and he said, Wilson, I won't get a girlfriend until you get a girlfriend. And he made a covenant with me. And then like maybe 4 months later, a year later, he sat me down and he's like, I'm sorry, I too have a girlfriend. And I screamed to no. Like, if it was a movie, it's like just screaming no, and the camera like panning in.
That's like Michael Scott in The Office when Toby comes back, right?
Yeah, it was that. It was so that. And I scared him. Like, he was scared that I was screaming. He's like, I thought you might be happy for me. I'm like, not happy at all. So I think the hardest part is that the relationship adjusts, and everyone only has 24 hours, and even just the level of intimacy. Like, someone gets to skip the line of 20 years of friendship and be closer, and it was hard to deal with. It was really hard. Yeah, I think a lot of it was just accepting reality, making other friends. I don't know. Do you have a good answer? I feel like all I have is the same trauma bond.
Well, I think, yeah, trauma bond is right. And I think the reason why this is such a good question is because it's so common and so painful. And I don't know whether there are such great blueprint answers for this. It's a part of life. There's never a season where everyone gets a partner at the same time on the same day. Like, okay, even if you were to get a, you know, find that partner for during the same season, there's still going to be at least several months worth where you're not going to have someone. You're kind of like a couple months, quote unquote, behind the other people. So
yeah.
So those things are really painful. And sometimes you'll find certain age groups that you'll find more of these painful situations. Maybe people in their late 30s, maybe people in their 40s, people who maybe focused on their career for a long time while others are not focusing on their career. They're just focusing on getting married. And then now they're like, okay, I think I'm ready to have a relationship now. And, you know, they say, oh, but all the good people are taken up. You know, I have like the bottom of the barrel to choose from, you know, that kind of talk. So it's tough. I think even in churches, like large groupings of churches, the sub ministries are divided into like singles and then married and things like that, as opposed to, let's say, people in their 30s, people in their 40s, right? And so the singles are generally people in their 20s and 30s, but what about the ones who are in their 40s and 50s? You know, like, are they going to hang out with the singles ministry, or are they going to hang out with the married people who are their age group, but then they can't really relate to them because they're not married like those people are? So it's a tough thing. I feel like as far as addressing it, the first thing, what I say, part of it has to do with, I think, how healthily a person can grieve, which includes, like, are you good at accepting certain things in life?
Yeah.
This is just kind of, this is not an indication that something's wrong with you or that you are broken or that you are less valuable, but like, this is a time when most people have found their partner and you have not. And can you grieve that? And, or is this a time to maybe re-strategize? You know, do you, if you really do want a partner, what is the best place to find that partner? Are there certain things about yourself that you may want to get some third party opinions about? You know, like, are there some social skills that are lacking that you can start to practice, that you can be that person that people want to engage with? So I feel like there's a lot of things that people can think about. One story that comes to mind is a person who, let's say they have interests that's very niche. And let's say that, you know, some dude is at a church where, I don't know, most of the other, and I'm not just even talking about like finding a girlfriend for this person or a romantic partner. I'm just talking about just finding friends. And this person's interests are so niche that it doesn't really align with what the majority of people like doing at that church. So like, let's say most people like fantasy football. Maybe they like
LARPing.
LARPing, right? Well, no, LARPing is very niche.
Oh yeah.
So let's use that as an example, right? Let's say this person likes LARPing, which most people do not like to do. And this person is feeling so lonely because, man, how come people at my church don't like LARPing? And they just, every single week, they're like wishing that they can try to convince people at their fantasy football loving church to enjoy LARPing, right?
Yes.
Look, dude, that's not going to work. You've got to try to find ways through like Monday through Saturday to find more LARPing communities, you know, outside of church that you can either find friends and you can find maybe a romantic partner through that, because you can't be going against the grain so strongly. I just feel like that is the wrong place to look for friends. Again, if you want to find people who are of common interest, maybe Jesus is the common interest at church, but good luck trying to convince them to like LARPing with you, you know. So I don't know, maybe that's one of my practical suggestions for people, is be in the company of people who have the common interest as you, and I think you can find friends and maybe even romantic partners quicker that way.
Yeah, I think a practical example on my end, because I hear a lot of people at my church, not a lot, but I've had these conversations at least 2-3 times a year where someone comes in and they really want to be accepted into a group. And I feel like that's really idolized, like the classic show Friends, right? You have six, seven people, you're always hanging out at each other's house, having dinner together, going to coffee shops, and it's your crew, it's your clique. And we do have that at our church where people have become extremely close friends over 8 years, are each other, at each other's weddings, in the bridal party, you know, doing life together. And it's so easy to envy that and kind of say, I just want to be in that group. Like, if I was in that group, I wouldn't be alone. I wouldn't feel lonely.
Right.
But it's hard to ask for that to the extent that many people are experiencing it. And I often say, hey, are there just one or two people that you're connecting with in small group or on Sundays that you enjoy their presence and you can deepen that one or two relationships? Mm-hmm. And so when people are kind of moving away from, I wish I was a part of this niche community, this really close group, and I'm thinking about just one or two people I could grab brunch with, grab a beer with, grab coffee with, or invite over, and I'm the one initiating. I'm the one taking the social risk. I'm the one scheduling. The people who have done that, which a lot of them have, they usually don't come away empty-handed. Mm-hmm. They're usually like, hey, I built a strong friendship. Oh, I built two friendships. Oh, I've built four friendships. And now I can have all four at my house because they're investing and taking risk and being intentional about those one or two people. And I think on the other hand, it's really easy to, instead of doing that, like, wish they were invited in and not express that and not initiate and then walk away kind of feeling like a forever observer of close friendships instead of a participant. And so I just kind of feel like if you feel alone, just kind of look around at your church, small group community or your hobby community and identify 2-3 people that you can take that first step of inviting them out to coffee, sharing your story, you know, asking about their story, and be just a great listener, a great question asker. Mm-hmm. And if that first, second time does well, you know, go on a third hangout with them, a fourth, find out what they're into.
That's
and
right.
Try to develop friendships one at a time, mm-hmm. instead of this idealized, like, man, I just want to be in that crew. You know, I'm just gonna hover around them until someone notices me. That's a lot. You can feel really rejected that way, I think.
I think that's so good, the way that you just parse that whole thing out. And I think that's kind of like feeling like, oh, I wish I could be part of that crew, that whole mentality. That sounds like middle school and high school all over again.
Yeah.
Or elementary school. It's almost like repeating that pattern. So I think as an adult, you use the word risk. Taking a healthy risk and doing something that's very different than what you did in grade school, and to actually address the loneliness instead of numbing it out. Because again, like, remember when I was pastoring and I was lonely, I numbed it out with gaming and porn. That doesn't address the loneliness.
Right.
So to actually address the loneliness is seeing whether you can build a connection with at least one person and thereby feel like you're actually connecting with one person. And, you know, you talked about that person taking a risk, and that's actually a good segue to the a couple of questions that a listener submitted. This person is a married person, and she said, what are some things that we as married people can do or say to honor singleness? What are some things that can be discouraging or off-putting that married people say or do because we're unaware or ignorant or out of touch with singleness? And what are some helpful or encouraging, uplifting things that married people can do in community with singles? And so, you know, how you were mentioning earlier that maybe the single people can reach out to someone and say, hey, can we grab coffee or whatever? That is a big risk, because what if, like, the person says, no, dude, I'm sorry, I'm busy, right? But if the married person also were to take a risk And if they're so inclined to minister to singles in this way, they can approach a single person and say, hey, I'm wondering whether, you know, you'd like to spend some time, or like grab a lunch with me and my wife, or me and my husband, right?
Yeah.
And just get to know each other. Like, oh my gosh, what a gift that would be to a single person, I think.
Mm. Yeah. And I love, there's a few families at our church that just open up their home for dinner once a week. So they're still doing home life. They have kids, but it's just kind of open. And they're asking the singles of their church, especially maybe some of the ones that are a little older, to say, hey, have a family dinner with us. Like, be a part of our family.
Mm.
And I think they just feel so loved and included. So I feel like some families are like, man, especially if young kids like me, I can't go hang out at a pub. You know, I can't stay up late. I can't play. I haven't played Settlers for years, even though I love that game, because my toddler would just like throw my wood and ore all over the place. But just inviting them into the rhythm of your family is such a gift for people who are single.
Yeah.
And I remember being invited into young families and really loving that experience, feeling the sense of community and feeling at home, you know, at home and not my home. So yeah, I would just encourage that, to just extend what you're already doing and your rhythms to people who are single.
Yeah. Yeah. This question, like, what could be off-putting? You know, what I thought of was in our previous episode, talking about aunties and uncles scolding.
Yeah.
So yeah. The popular one was, when are you gonna get married? You know, like, when are you gonna find a husband? When are you gonna find a girlfriend? Like, do you want me to find someone for you? Yeah, that kind of thing. And you know, for some people, they may want that, like, truly, they may want that partner in life. But sometimes the way that a married older person asks that question could be so off-putting, because it feels judgmental, or it feels like pressurized. It kind of reminds them of what their parents or their grandma, you know, would say to them, that it's like,
yeah,
oh, I'm bouncing from this conversation. So I think there's a way to explore that question without phrasing it like that, you know, hey, when are you going to get married? Right. But rather, just getting to know that person. Like, so tell me about yourself, you know, tell me about your career. Do you like your career? You know, what was your education experience like? Did you like going to that school? How'd you like your major? It's like all just kind of curiosity questions. And like, you know, maybe you can ask, do you have a love life? You know, what do you think about your love life? You know, like, just rather than, it's just kind of open-ended, as out of curiosity, rather than saying, hey, when are you going to get married? Because maybe the person doesn't even want to get married.
Right.
You know? But they're so sick and tired of answering that question. So I don't know. That's where my mind goes. Do you have anything to add to what might be kind of an off-putting question that married people can ask?
Yeah, I think you're right. Just kind of not wanting to come to the table assuming that they want to get married or that marriage is better, but really honoring their singleness and honoring that season the Lord has called them into, helping them embrace it with like open hands. You know, Paul says it's better to be single than married, especially when it comes to serving the Lord, and being able to be focused on him rather than have our attention divided. And I think the subliminal message is actually that being married is better.
Yeah.
So how do we really honor God's season in their life at that moment?
I think we need to have a separate episode about Paul saying it's better to be single. Like what does that really look like, right? Like,
that's true.
Yeah. What do you do with sexual tension and all that kind of stuff? So I think that'd be a good one to talk about.
Yeah, I actually, I've had such a strong sex drive for most of my life. And when I was single in my late 20s, I just did not know what to do with that, for most of my single life. And I remember going to this open Q&A at Biola. Dallas Willard was doing a Q&A. Yeah, and so I picked up the mic in front of like 1,000 students. I'm like, so as a single guy with a sex drive, what do you do with that, Dallas Willard? And he thought about it and he said, oh, this actually applies to like men who are widowed, a divorce and older singles. And he said, under God in community. And I was like, is he reciting the Pledge of Allegiance? Like, did he just have like a random neuron fire for the Pledge of Allegiance? But I thought about that obviously way more over the years. And I think there is this sense of being under the authority of the Lord in terms of righteousness and being faithful to being pure and in community where we can express our sexuality even through like friendship. There's my maleness, the parts of me that I don't know. I'm just thinking about the many sister relationships that I've had that were like good, and yet we were still interacting as male and female. That was actually really positive. Yeah.
Interesting. Would you, as you interpreted Dallas Willard's response, would that does that also include, like, let's say, grieving together as friends, because we can't actually engage in like intercourse with people because we're not married and that kind of thing? Like, is that part of the experience, is to grieve together?
Not that I engaged in, but maybe it can be. Yeah.
Because I wonder what, when he says under God in community, like, is he saying, yeah, I know it's tough and I know it's tough to refrain,
Oh, I see.
but you can refrain together in community? Like, I wonder if that's what he's alluding to.
Yeah. Or the Pledge of Allegiance. I
Or a
don't
pledge of
know.
allegiance, exactly. Yeah.
But I can see where you're coming from. Yeah, I could definitely see that. So as we wrap up this episode, I thinking about Roy, maybe one of the most valuable things you talked about is that loneliness can beget loneliness. We
Oh, for
can
sure.
be alone and then become more alone by how we are dealing with it, by our addictions, by watching anime all day, by further isolation. And that actually causes us to forget how to connect intimately with others. It makes us awkward in situations. And I feel like so much of what you're saying is like, how do we step out and take those risks to fight loneliness in order to connect with others? So some of those connections I think looks like being invited to family, community, and as a single person to find extended family through people who have kids, through mothers and fathers in the church, and really experiencing family that way, experiencing connection in co-ed relationships under God and community. And then I think in some popular in some and then the advice of just like looking for one person to invest in if we feel alone, to look for one person to invest in. And then also I would say to add to that, to not look for the most popular person, not necessarily look for the most attractive person. Like if you're at a church, there's some people who have their friend cap is full. Everyone's kind of revolving around them.
That's true.
But there's in communities, I'm always looking for the underrated person, the person who's newer, or the person who has these amazing qualities. But in LA, we don't see them because all we see is skin. All we see is the surface, is the Instagram photo. But man, I've found people who with very kind hearts, with a deep conviction to be loyal, who will kind of ride or die with you. And often they're not the people with 100 friends. They're the people who are overlooked. So I would suggest, man, if you're feeling alone, look for other people who aren't the center of attention. They're maybe not the most popular kid, but there's these deep characteristics about who they are, their integrity, their kindness, their loyalty. I would say go after those people. And the last thing I would want to say is that even if you're dating, or for me, I'm married, I got two kids and one on the way, you're still going to experience loneliness.
Sure.
I'm a pastor, so my full-time job is making friends and connection. I have a beautiful wife and two kids that I love, but I still feel alone. There's many moments throughout the day where I can't communicate what my soul is feeling because there are no words, or there's parts of me that are still hidden, or there's parts of who I am that over 10 years of marriage, my wife still doesn't get, and I don't get parts of her. Her grief or her history or a need that she has, I can't meet it. And so I go back to my elementary experience and I say, man, there's this friend in Jesus that parts of me only he'll understand. And how do I find satisfaction and fullness in him? So just wanting to encourage us that even though there's people around us that we are meant to connect to, we're meant to have those relationships. They're ultimately not going to be what fully satiates our soul, that only the Lord can. So I just wanted to encourage, our listeners in that way.
And for people who might be feeling very foreign to that concept, I think what a person can do just to start heading in that direction is to present their loneliness to God through talking it out with Him. Like just simply as, God, I am so lonely. And I hear that you know me. I hear that you want to draw close to me. I have yet to feel that way, but I want to feel like you are drawing close to me. Like, could you give me an experience of you drawing close to me? Like, even just asking that to him, not just once, but like the persistent widow, like knocking every single day at the judge's door. Like to keep asking God to do that, like you might be surprised at how God answers that, So, glad that you could, mention that because I think you're right. Like we can experience substantial connection even amongst our human brethren and sisters. But even then it might still feel incomplete. And so to ask God to really like not just like cement all those friendships in a way that feels even more substantial to you, but for have to have God be that best friend to you. And I do preface that I do want to qualify that because sometimes people because they are not so good with social friendships that they'll just kind of retreat into like just being with God, and that'll be like their crutch for like not taking risks with horizontal friendships. Like that's not what we're talking about, but having both, to have a real substantial relationship with God as friend, but also having substantial relationships with people as friends too. So that's a good way to close out our episode. Thanks, Wilson, for a really good deep dive into this topic. And hopefully the listeners found something about what we talked about today that resonated, that made you feel like you're not alone, and that there are others in the same boat as you. If you have any sort of feedback or questions about the topic of about singleness or about today's topic of subtopic of loneliness, you can submit by email at thesameboatpod@gmail.com. And until next time, please disembark safely.